Judit Kinski was born into an assimilated Jewish family in Budapest in 1927. Her mother, Ilona, worked in an office. Her father, Imre, was a photographer and a remarkably good one at that. But his career was cut short when he vanished on a Nazi death march in 1945. We are going to use a portion of Judit's interview with Doris Shardy, in which she tells us about the end of the Second World War and how she and her mother survived in the Budapest ghetto. Her story is read for us by Jenny Barnett in London.
By October 1944, my brother, who was 17, and my father had been sent to forced labour, and my mother and I had to go into the Budapest ghetto. We didn't take much with us, but I took 4 boxes of my father's photographs, and I gave his negatives to a friend of his who promised to guard them with his life. Even though I've lived in Budapest ever since then, I've never been back to the house in the ghetto, where we lived with at least 30 others. When I even walked close to that street, I remember the Arrow Cross men, the Hungarian Nazis, shooting people in that house. Well, I can't go there. Not ever. Earlier in the war, my father had all of us convert out of Judaism, like a lot of Hungarian Jews did. Everyone was hoping this would save them. It didn't, of course. He chose Greek Catholicism because the liturgy is in Hungarian. Gabor, who was so deathly afraid of being deported, would go to church almost every day and pray his heart out on his knees, even while he was wearing his yellow star. At first, Father was in forced labour in Romania, and only later was he sent on a transport to Germany. My mother and I stayed in this house in the ghetto until the middle of January, when the Soviet soldiers arrived. Mother went outside to greet them, and they gave us some bread and some chocolate for me. I was 10 years old then. We didn't know anything about Auschwitz or what happened to those in forced labour. It didn't even occur to us that my father might not come home. Although the war went on, once Budapest had been liberated, my mother and I went to the Kaleti station every day. We went up to everybody who got off those trains, showed them pictures of Gabor and my father, and asked if they had seen them. The station was absolutely filled with people doing the same thing. I held up a picture of Gabor and asked, "Have you seen this lad?" And one of my father, "Have you seen this man?" One day, and this would have been in the last spring, my mother found a man who'd been in the same forced labour brigade as my father. He said that their rail car had been unhooked somewhere in Germany, and they all went on foot towards Sachsenhausen, so they had been on a death march. This man said the prisoners spent the night at a farm somewhere, and they slept in a barn filled with straw. He said his legs were in such bad shape that he decided he would take his chances. He wormed himself into the straw. The next morning, they didn't find him, and that's how he survived. But he told my mother he didn't know about the others, and we never found anyone else who had been with my father. So now we know that somewhere between this farm and Sachsenhausen, everyone must have been shot. But back then, we figured that Father would still be coming home. It was only much later that we found out about Gabor, who'd been deported in the winter of 1944. My mother found a young man who'd worked with my brother. He told us they were deported together, and when they arrived in Buchenwald, they were driven out of the wagon and asked what kind of qualifications they had. Gabor told them he was a student, and this young man told us that the Germans immediately tied him up. It was a December morning, and hosed him down with water just to watch him freeze to death. He said that they did that to everyone who wasn't going to work. My brother Gabor, who had taught me to swim, to skate, to identify every flower, who oversaw all my homework when we'd been thrown out of school, he was now dead. Gabor was just 17 years old. I think at that moment something broke in my mother. She always waited for my father. She refused to declare him dead, even though she would have been eligible for a widow's pension. She waited for him until the day she died in 1983. But she gave up waiting for her son. Mother had grown accustomed to the fact that my father managed everything, and for a short time, when my Uncle Imre came back from internment, he took over the part of my father. He got married, but he still took care of us financially. We lived on Litz Ferenc Square. We had four rooms, so Uncle Imre set up his medical practice in two of them. When my mother's sister Nyongi came back, she lived with us. So did my father's sister, Auntie Cato. Everybody else, all the grandparents, uncles, aunts, and my cousins, they were all dead, more than 30 of us. And a few decided to emigrate, so we existed in a kind of vacuum. That's why my mother held on to her family as tight as she could. She ran the household, she cleaned the house, she did all the washing and cooking, and one by one, our family moved out. So the two of us were left alone. Mother was never not enterprising. The spare room, she rented it to a travel agency, and she took a job as a secretary. Then one day, it was April 1945, she looked at me and said, almost surprised, "Aren't you supposed to be in school?"
In the years after the war, Judith's mother couldn't bear to part with a single photograph that her husband took. And in time, Imre Kinsky's name as a modernist photographer vanished, until the 1980s. After her mother's death, Judith began speaking with museums, photography galleries, and curators. And by 2010, major museums in France, the United States, Hungary, and elsewhere were purchasing his work. And Imre Kinsky is now considered one of the great modernist photographers. Judith herself married, had a daughter, and well into her 90s, she was learning Spanish, playing guitar, and we were meeting with her regularly every month.